Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're talking a little bit around, you know, brands, communications, businesses, stakeholders, how this industry communicating with different stakeholders is doing. And to help us to unpack what's actually going on out there, we're joined by Pritesha Siraj, who is the CEO of the Lorries, an African and Middle East premier award that actually recognizes, rewards, inspires, and fosters creative excellence in advertising and the brand communication industry. And they actually recently held some of their awards for the year, and we're going to also be reflecting back on what actually happened and why some of these groups and companies got or what they did. Pritesh, greetings to you.
Hi, good day. Thanks for having me on.
I think just a good place for us to begin, you know, before we really get into the Lorries. At the moment, how do you feel just around, you know, the state of brand communication and advertising, specifically in South Africa at the moment?
Yeah, I think we're still at a healthy position, but there is a point for concern. So I think having a look at brand communication across South Africa, the potential for innovation is being stifled by limited budgets. So if you think about the type of brand communication we were all exposed to a few years ago, and let's look in a chunk, let's say 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and you think of some iconic communication that has influenced us and that sticks with us, you tend to find that that is becoming less and less over time, and we're getting very functional stuff. So yes, we're still strong, and you still get one or two iconic communication campaigns that come out, but I do think there's room for improvement and actually room to go back to the points we were a few years ago.
And perhaps as a quick follow-up to that one, I think traditionally, and I think we might have seen this year, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. Traditionally, we've seen that in a corporate sense, when companies go through cost-cutting measures, etc., which has been a term used a lot in 2020 by companies trying to survive the pandemic, one of the first places that people cut is in the area of advertising and brand communication. Your thoughts around that?
Yeah, so I mean, it seems like a very logical short-term solution, and it makes sense, and I completely understand the logic behind it. Where in the short term, you go, we have a challenge, and we need to cut a budget, and the quickest is let's cut the marketing budget. But the reality is, and generally, think about some really strong, iconic brands. They all eventually die out over time when the brand continues maintaining that strategy. So while it's tactical and can work in the short term, the reality is if it becomes a strategic part of the brand's identity where they or their plans, where they go, if we're struggling, we'll just cut from marketing, you will tend to find that they will lose their consumers over time, and the overall brand loses its market share, and therefore lots of important brands are not here anymore.
I think that nicely then leads us to the Lorries themselves. Firstly, just a little bit around the Lorries and perhaps how the organization has been able to weather, because you guys are an organization, how you guys have been able to weather this storm, especially in light of, you know, the fact that you guys are supported by the industry, but, you know, industry budgets are one of the first to get cut when people are going through difficult times. So as the Lorries, some background, and also how has the pandemic affected you guys?
Yeah, so it's been tough on us because the Lorries is a non-profit organization. And if marketing budgets get cut first, non-profits lose out even faster than marketing budgets if you think about a company budgets and spends. So we have struggled, and it has been a little bit tough, but I joined this year in April, and one of my strategic directions is to ensure that we go back to the root of who we are, the first principles of who we are as an organization, and that is to support the brand communication industry, because if we have a strong brand communication industry, we have a strong society as well. So what we did was we decided to go in the total opposite direction. We went, let's double down on actually supporting the industry. So we gave up our revenue that normally comes in from entries and made that free. We held a creative week last week, which cost a fraction of the cost would normally cost somebody to actually attend. And we've done this because we know that if we, it's all about shared value. If we ensure that we work together with the industry and support it during its toughest times, because we're part of the industry, we can ensure that we can survive as an organization longer. But I won't lie, it has been tough. It is tough. If you look at our P&L, it's not exciting. But despite that, what is exciting is what we've been able to achieve this year and the number of people we've been able to touch across Africa and the Middle East.
In terms of the African Middle East footprint, is it all countries? Is it specific countries?
No, we're open to any country across Africa and the Middle East. So any work that's created for the region. So what's important is if the work was created outside of our region, they can enter it as long as it's flighted in our region and it's for our region. But primarily, the work that's entered into Lurie's is created in Africa and the Middle East for Africa and the Middle East.
Okay. No, I think that makes sense. And how have you felt, at least from some of the entries that you felt this year, were there any that stood out to you? Where you're like, okay, fine, I've been in the industry for a while now, and this is something I'd actually not seen before or implemented in an unusual way, because you did start off talking about the fact that you feel like innovation is lacking a little bit in the industry.
Yeah, so as I said, in terms of South Africa, that's what I find. I find that our innovation is being stifled by budgets, where instead of having brave, I come from the marketing world, so I can generally say this. Instead of having brave marketers who are looking to go out there and touch the lives of consumers and excite them and create the connection with the brand, we tend to now have a lot of marketers who are going very functional and go, here's my product, this is the price. So it becomes transactional instead of emotional. Having said that, for South Africa, I do think across Africa and the Middle East, we do see a lot of innovation. In fact, for the Lurie's, the number one criteria is innovation. Nothing can win if it doesn't display innovation. And in terms of innovation, I mean, we saw some really innovative campaigns. I want to highlight one, which was one of our Grand Prix winning campaigns, which was by MasterCard and FP7 McCann from Dubai. What they did was there was a massive eclipse that was planned that was pretty rare for Dubai that was happening, and 97% of the sun was going to be blocked. So they partnered with an online retailer and said, we're going to match the eclipse. As the eclipse progresses, if the eclipse is at 50%, we're going to give you 50% discount, culminating in a 97% discount on these sites. Now, how innovative is that? That's an amazing idea, being able to use, natural phenomena that's timeless, linked with technology that's available today to excite consumers. That's innovation. So that was a campaign that I thought was absolutely amazing, that did fantastically well. And then obviously within South Africa as well, if you look at the work being done by Joe Public and Chicken Licken, they have multiple examples of really innovative campaigns that are coming out of Chicken Licken, which is still exciting and not the boring. It's a brand selling chicken in the end of the day, but in the way they sell chicken is very exciting and innovative.
I actually like that when you said that they sell chicken at the end of the day, but the way that they sell it is very innovative. At this point, I feel like we also need to take a step back and maybe get an explanation from you as someone who's one in the industry but also overseeing this industry body, because I feel like, at least from a consumer point of view, we tend to conflate some of the terms that are used in the industry. And I don't know whether we are getting it wrong or whether the industry is, using them interoperably, but like public relations, marketing, sales, communication, brand communication. Do you guys differentiate when you guys are considering maybe some of the campaigns, or perhaps just considering, the length and breadth of the industry?
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, sometimes, we're so internally focused that we use this terminology and we forget that lots of people may not understand on a granular level what it means. So one of the things is in our campaigns, you'll notice that we go in depth in terms of who we're awarding, why we're awarding them. But in terms of who we cover and the lengths of the industry that we cover, we cover everything from public relations to live events, to out of home, to television campaigns, to shared value, which means where companies and brands exactly work with consumers and work with communities to ensure shared value, to service design, to brands that are working on the experience that the consumer has when they actually shop their channels. So overall, what the Lurys does is we have multiple touch points. We touch every single point related to where brands want to interact with consumers, and we reward great and innovative work in those areas.
And also the other one is just around, because we started off this conversation talking about where the marketing budgets are cut and, you know, all of that. So for you, where do you actually place, you know, brand communication? Because it would be remiss of us to not mention, you know, like a case like, you know, Clicks, maybe not specifically Clicks and what happened with them, but just companies responding to some fallout from the public. Do you think, you know, cases like that perhaps justify that, you know, marketing brand communication should be, you know, seen as being more strategic and something that people can knee jerk and just take money out of whenever they feel like they need to, you know, they need to save money?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I think is, you're right. When challenges happen, brands find the money to be able to communicate and do what needs to be done. But it's about authenticity. And I think this is what we need to do. Brands have an authentic self that they want to project to consumers, to the people who are buying the products. And if you're not continuously reinforcing that image amongst consumers all the time, and not just when challenges happen, then the consumer has reason to distrust you later on when the challenges happen. So what you need to ensure is have an image of your brand that's real, that's authentic, that you actually live for the brand, continuously communicate it at multiple touch points and in different areas, and ensure that a consumer knows who you are and what you stand for. And the reality is all brands at some point within their history make mistakes. And what those mistakes are, you can see there are multiple campaigns and multiple things that have happened around the world where brands have been hit for making mistakes. But when you do that, consumers are more likely to forgive you if you're continuously communicating with them. If they don't know who you are and you make a mistake, then they absolutely will believe that you're racist, misogynistic, or have low quality product, or whatever the issue is. They will believe that first over anything else because they don't understand your brand value. So my recommendation is that we live in a world where people want to create connections with other people, with brands, with communities. And if brands really want to tap into this, they need to start creating those relationships again with consumers instead of it just making it transactional or just dealing with issues when they arise.
Have local businesses, at least in the last decades, because at least from the outside looking in, it seems as if there's been that shift where I think businesses have always taken some type of customer feedback, whether it's letters, call centers, etc. But social media seems to have put some of the, has given a platform to consumers to vent out their frustrations in a very public way. No longer just writing a letter that may or may not be seen by someone in the back office somewhere. So from that point of view, do you think businesses have been able to effectively adapt some of their strategies so that they can cater to some of these things as and when they arise?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to realize that businesses at the end of their day are run by people who in their own personal lives are consumers. So they're taking those insights and they're incorporating into businesses. So I do think a lot of businesses are able to effectively incorporate it. But they also need to remember that the technology is continuously progressing and changing at such a rapid rate that they continuously need to innovate and change. So you cannot sit at a point and go, yes, I've delivered my mandate to be able to continuously monitor what consumers are saying and be able to speak to them. You have to realize that this is a continuous developmental process that's not going to stop as long as technology keeps progressing. So as soon as brands and companies become complacent and think I've reached this point, that is the point when they're going to start declining. So continuous improvement is going to help every business around the country.
I'm very curious because just to, from a background point of view, you've said that you've been in the industry for, a number of years. What has your time in the industry actually looked like?
Yeah, so I've been in the industry for nearly 20 years now, so coming up in 2 decades and a little bit. I started off on the brand side at Procter & Gamble. Now, so the interesting thing is I studied archaeology. So I've been able to merge this really interesting knowledge that we get from classical civilizations and archaeology and things from our human society into the brand world, into the agency world. One of the things I'm passionate about is understanding where we've come from. And I think with a lot of organizations, we're so forward-facing that we forget where we've come from, we forget our history, and we're not able to use that to properly apply it and move forward. And lots of brands are guilty of this. They're so forward-facing, they change people, and they don't actually think about where they're going to go. So I use this knowledge of from archaeology in the brand world, and I've used it in my career at Procter & Gamble, places at Reckitt Benckiser. I brought a company called Product of the Year to South Africa, which ran for 12 years before I sold it to a multinational French organization that's one of the top three biggest advertising agencies in the world. And in this phase of the Lurie's, which I see as the next phase of stuff, I think one of the things I want to highlight as well is how do we ensure that we have respect for our past and understanding of all the challenges that we've experienced so that we can continuously learn that, learn from it, apply it, so that we can innovate based on a solid foundation.
I'm still reeling from the fact that you studied archaeology at the moment, and it's now got me thinking: does a person necessarily need to have studied marketing or communications to actually succeed in the industry?
I don't think so. So I have worked with people in marketing who, so you've got somebody like myself who I look, I've gone on and studied other stuff and got degrees post that, but I've worked with doctors, I've worked with people who've had studied physiology, studied food sciences, but you've worked in diapers. The reality is this. Is that in the end of the day, what you need is, and what your degree gives you, is the ability to be able to think critically, to analyze data, and be able to understand how to take that data and present it in a strategic way and formulate planning. That's why you go into university. But in a brand world, if you're working in a marketing company, we should have varied degrees of people coming from different career paths coming in because we're speaking to people who are living in worlds with different career paths. If you have homogenous thinking where everyone's gone in and studied a marketing degree, learned it Porter's five forces, comes in and goes, we're going to use Porter's five forces to dictate every single strategy we have, you're going to find that the innovation is going to be lost. So, going back to your question, do you need to study marketing? I think there's a lot of companies who make a mistake and go, you have to study marketing to get into a marketing department. I think really smart companies realize that you need people from varied backgrounds in order to be able to excite consumers.
When you started talking about Porter's five forces, I just got a flashback to all my to my BCom days back in university. But I guess looking forward for the Lorries, how are you seeing you guys' performance in the coming year, at least based off of this year that you guys have had to endure? How are your prospects? You guys took a bit of a financial hit this year. But going forward, do you anticipate that you'll be able to recover in the coming year?
Yeah, so I always look at it like this, like what is the profit motive for an organization? And various organizations, their profit motives are rands, dollars, cents. For the Lurie's, our profit is a strong and healthy brand communication industry across Africa and Middle East. If we can maintain that, we'll do everything possible to ensure that happens. So we delivered that this year. So while the financial profits may look, the financial numbers look really bad. You can't even use the word profit on it because we didn't we took a hit on that. The reality of the situation is that from a profit in terms of delivering value to the industry, I think we far surpassed many, many other years because we had so many people on our platform and so many people engaging with us and getting all of this valuable information. where we're heading forward, I think the reality is it's not just for the Luris, and we need to look at this for society coming out of COVID-19, and especially for Africa and the Middle East. I think 2021 is going to be a difficult year. I think it's good to have a vaccine that's going to be able to help, but I do think we're still going to have challenges. We're still going to have issues. To give you an analogy, you know, if a fan is turning and you switch it off, even though the electricity is turned off, the blades keep turning. That's our situation next year. The vaccine and the herd immunity, if it ever comes with COVID-19, is like switching off the switch. But those blades are still turning and you're still going to feel the effects. So I think we're only going to see some degree of recovery into 2022, 2023. But we're lucky from a financial sense to have sponsors who support us and ensure that we're strong and healthy. And also, even more important, really lucky to have an industry that is so vested in the success of the Luris and ensuring that the Luris are there to support them. So I do think we will be able to deliver on our objective of supporting the industry. What the numbers look like, I still don't know, but I know we will be able to help the industry next year.
No, we certainly hope that those numbers do, you know, see that recovery. But as you rightly said, you know, just that dose of reality that the coming year is likely to be hard. The other part of the Luris is Africa and the Middle East. So as we come to the end of the discussion, I just want to touch on two points. And the first one, how do you see the industry in the rest of the regions that you guys cover outside of South Africa?
Yeah, I think we have a strong, vibrant brand communication industry. Wherever we have people and brands will need to speak to people so that people have awareness of what they're offering and people are able to buy it. What I absolutely love is that there's two layers. Every region has their own unique way of communicating these values. Like, I love looking at some of the Nigerian ads as an example and see how Nigeria is communicating, or Ghana or Kenya. There's beautiful uniqueness. And the same thing when we look at ads from Middle East, be it from Turkey or UAE, they've got that local flavor. And that should never be lost. We want to ensure that local flavor remains. And then another layer on top of that as well is this ability to compete with some of the best thinking and communication that happens from around the world, be it from the USA, be it from Western Europe, be it from Asia. So I do think our region is strong and vibrant. I think that across African countries, excluding South Africa and Middle Eastern countries, are producing some amazing work that's resonating with their consumers. And I think we're going to see even more amazing work come out over the next few years to come.
And then lastly, I'm sure you get to this question quite a bit, but in terms of platforms, which platforms do you see as being important in the coming year? We often hear that there's been the demise of print, that billboards are still resilient, that radio reaches big audiences, so does TV. And now the internet is eating everyone's marketing budgets. So where do you see, that evolution? Where do you see growth on that front?
Yeah, I think all of the platforms can still exhibit growth. There's a place for all of them. If you look at it as part of our Grand Prix winners, we had Novamed win on a print campaign. And then we had BBC and the odd number win with Kasi Sensei on a radio campaign. And print and radio are two areas where everyone loves to quote that these areas are going to be dying out really, really soon. The reality is that the areas that will do well are the areas in which the market leaders are willing to cannibalize themselves, where the market leaders are willing to look at it and say, I need to do better and I can do something totally different. Those are the areas where you're going to see continuous growth. Because as soon as people within that space, if you're in print and you give up and say, the internet's going to cannibalize me, there's no way to win, it'll happen because that's your belief structure. But if you're in that area and you find that you're facing challenges and you embrace innovation to excite consumers, consumers will understand it, that will resonate with them, and they will support you. So my advice is that wherever there's innovation, those sectors will do well. And if you're in a sector and you think your sector is dying, then that's the wrong mentality to have at this stage, and you need to innovate.
So that's been up with Pritesh Raj, the CEO of the Lorries, giving us some insights on a wide-ranging conversation about advertising and brand communication. Just talking about the fact that there is still a place for, the different mediums that are out there, despite some of the doom and gloom that's been given and predictions about the death of print and radio and some of the more traditional platforms. He says that as long as people are willing to innovate, an issue that he says is being stifled by cuts in some of the marketing budgets, he says people can, have a place for all of those things and some of their entries and winners, etc., to be from the different platforms. So there is a place for all of that. Also talking about the fact that this year has been, quite significant in just companies actually having to be forced to communicate and also putting the industry at the fore. And also, just talking about the importance of history and how that can help brands to better communicate for the future as long as they pay attention to the past. Suraj, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really good chatting to you.
All right, so that was us with Pritesh Suraj, CEO of the Lorries.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A wide-ranging conversation just around advertising and brand communication, and I think at this time, a very important discussion to have simply because of what's been going on in 2020. A lot of companies had to come in and communicate with their clients, with their business partners, with their customers, just around what was going on. We saw at the beginning of lockdowns in South Africa, for example, companies coming out with business updates, talking about business continuity, all of these issues that have to do with communicating with your various stakeholders, just so that people can be good and well aware of what's actually going on. And just like what Pritesh was saying, companies that are found to constantly communicate are usually seen or perceived as being better by consumers or the public. And I think that lends itself to just taking into consideration and having communication and advertising as being a strategic function in a company. And also just that factor of, in a crisis situation, it seems that companies do magically find the money to actually pay for some of these services also just lends itself to the fact that it's not seen still by some companies as being a vital function. But I would actually argue that it is very important for, some of these communications. I think the clicks example is just the perfect one, where if that had been a situation that was handled either proactively or had been handled, in a better way from the get-go, they may have avoided a lot of embarrassment for themselves and possible loss of reputation. So, good conversation, likely to see how, this one progresses. And more importantly, just seeing what type of platforms become very important. In the clicks example, it was a lot of outrage that filtered first on social media and then, onto the, the mainstream channels. So that evolution of how people are debating and, consuming brands and communicating with brands is going to be a discussion that needs to be watched going forward. And it would be interesting to see how that evolution, goes on, the way that companies engage with their people and the way that people engage with their brands.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, or wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. We'll be right back.